Welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there.
This is a chance of a lifetime.
When you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal.
We are all on the same team.
Know your role and do it to the best of your ability.
Focus on the fundamentals. We've gone over time and time again.
Your defense has got to be better.
Leave no doubt tonight.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
My name is Paul Barnett, and you are listening to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we explore leadership through the lens of high-performance sport by interviewing great coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us lead our teams better. Our great coach on this episode is pioneering Australian rules football coach, Peter Searle. Peter played football for 10 years in the Victorian State Women's League, where she was named in the All-Australian team on three occasions. She then began her coaching career in 2005 with the Derebin Falcons, and in 2006, she coached the first of her five successive premierships with the team. This led to her being awarded the Victorian Female Coach of the Year in 2010. In 2011 and 2013, she was head coach of the Victorian State team in the AFL Women's National Championships, and was named the All-Australian coach in 2011. In 2012, she was an assistant coach for the Port Melbourne men's team, and in 2013, led the Western Bulldogs in the first ever AFL Women's Exhibition game. In 2014, she joined the St Kilda Football Club in the AFL as a development coach, making her the first full-time female assistant coach in the league's history. Then in 2019, Peter was appointed the head coach of the St Kilda Football Club women's team. In addition, Peter received the Medal of the Order of Australia in 2019. Peter is a coach with a unique combination of resilience and the type of steely persistence that only true pioneers possess. She's articulate and authentic and focused on leaving a legacy that inspires others. At the start of this interview, Peter was guarded, almost distrusting, but as it progresses, she talks more deeply about the facets of coaching that are important to her. And some of the key parts that resonated with me afterwards were how great coaches care for you as a human first and want you to grow and develop, and they do this through both challenging and supporting you. How she focuses on understanding the barriers that are stopping someone from succeeding and then tries to help remove them. And in women's sport, this can mean removing many years of socialized biases. And that there is always something that can be learned from sad or low times if you are able to change the narrative and view it from a different angle. Peter is a coach that is changing the way we think about coaches in elite sport. It's a terrific interview. For me, it's someone we're going to hear a lot more of in the future. And I hope you enjoy it as much as Jim and I did.
The Great Coaches Podcast.
So Peter Searle, it's a pleasure to meet you. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. And yeah, look, it's great to be on.
It's a real privilege to talk to you. So many things I want to cover, but I wanted to start off by just asking you about great coaches. You've had first-hand experience with some of the greats of AFL football, Ayres, Richardson, Alves, Neil Craig, David Parkin, just to name a few. And I'm interested to hear what you think the great coaches do differently.
For me, probably the most obvious in this was Gary Ayres. First of all, his care factor around the people that he works with is amazing. Like, he genuinely, truly just cares for you as a human being, first and foremost. And then because of that, he's really wants to grow and develop you. He does this better than anyone that I've ever known. There's a lot of people that say that, yeah, I'll develop you or come along and we all grow our people and so forth. But I find very few people actually know what that looks like or how to do that. Gary is certainly one of those that knows what it looks like for different individuals and how to go about it. He's got a really good balance between letting you go, but then knowing when you need support, but whilst also challenging you at the same token. Even when you don't want to be challenged, he can be quite challenging at times, but it's all based around his philosophy to grow you as a person or a coach or a player, etc. So to me, that's what great coaches do. They care and they actually understand the individual and how to grow that individual and what that looks like for that individual.
I've heard you talk about the fact that your coaching philosophy is about coaching the person. Could you talk a little bit about how you apply this philosophy to the teams that you take on that are often so diverse in age and personalities and things like that?
I think when you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal and you can bring them along the journey and you can, I guess, make it, well, it's their journey, it's their goal, it's their team, it's not mine, I'm just the person driving the bus, so to speak. And you can confuse that by having people say, oh, if you have a really good relationship with your players or you really got to spend time with them, getting to know them and heaps of coffee, etc., or whatever. I don't drink coffee, so that's never the case. But it doesn't have to be deep like that. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. It can be just having a good idea of what they bring into the club, what the players bring with them in terms of what they've had to live within their life, challenges, what are the barriers around them that's stopping them from succeeding is about understanding and knowing your players. And then what do you need to do as a coach to help remove those barriers that enables them then to reach the potential that they need to go? I have an example of someone that I've coached in the past, big, strong person, big, strong female that's probably all her life been told to be gentle. One of my coaches was getting frustrated. He was like, I don't understand why she doesn't just use her body and just doesn't do this or do that. When you think about it, probably for 20 years of her life, she's probably been told, be gentle, be gentle. Now we're all saying, be rough, be physical, be tough, do all these things. Like, it's 20 years of socialization we've got to undo here. And the light bulb goes in the coach's head and goes, oh, yeah, okay. So that's what I mean. It's about having an understanding, not just them, but their background or society's perceptions of them and basically things that can be subconsciously or can be quite obvious that's, I guess, impeding their ability to perform to where they could perform to.
You've had this unique coaching experience where you've coached a range of ages because you're also a PE teacher. You've also coached men and women. How do you think this sort of exposure to a really diverse group of people has helped you as a coach?
I think it's helped me. Look, and it's just like parenting, isn't it, as well? The more you start to understand the complexities of people, whether they're male, female, whether they're 22, whether they're 19, whether they're 32. Probably if I had my time again, I probably would study a psychology degree and then go into coaching. But I'm not going to go backwards. Well, not backwards, but don't have the time or money to do that. I think what it just enables you to do is just have greater understanding of the complexities, greater tolerance. I've really learnt that everyone's got spots, but there's also a lot of good that everyone's got. So it's about working with the spots and tolerating the spots, but it's really about extracting the good and really developing what it is in those people that's special, whether it's a talent, whether it's skill, whether it's personality, looking more for the good in people.
Peter, I remember first hearing you talk way back on the Could Have Been Champions. Must have been over 20 years ago. And since then, I've seen you rise through the coaching ranks. And there was this wonderful video, Unfinished Business, that the ABC put out. And I was showing that to my family in preparation for today. And we were all talking about persistence and dealing with resilience and how it's such an important trait to develop. I'm really interested to understand how you help people in your team develop those traits or get better in that area.
I think it's a lot of it just lead by example to start with, isn't it? I guess I'm a pretty good role model in that aspect. Sport's hard. AFLW in particular is hard. It's a short season. There's no reserves teams to prove your performance. So if you don't get picked, it's like AFL on steroids. Everything's magnified because it's so short that the impact is quite big. So every week is quite dramatic for the 9 players that don't get chosen. It's quite tough. So it's just a matter of always workshopping. I mean, it does look different with different individuals, isn't it? But it's always a matter of what the opportunity is. It's not what's gone or you're not getting, but what is the opportunity going forward? And is it next week? Maybe, maybe not. The opportunity is to work on something, to improve on something, or maybe the opportunity is just to grow some resilience. So there's always something that can be achieved out of a sad time or low level, so to speak. So it's about changing the narrative to not what you've lost, but what you can gain.
Oh, fantastic. I wanted to take you back actually to your first year of coaching, where you had transitioned from being a player in Darabin and then you took the team from the bottom all the way to the grand final. And I'd like to know, what changed in that year? What changed for you and for the team?
Look, culture changed. It was a club that needed a lot of strong guidance and direction around what that looked like in terms of expectations of behaviours, both on and off the field. It was about actually educating them around the game, had great coaching and haven't been educated, so to speak. So if you give them the education, you give them the clear guidelines about what's required in terms of performance and selection, et cetera, I found they really thrived on it and really wanted it. They probably didn't know they wanted it because they never had it. And I think that because they thrived on this, it's like boundaries, isn't it? Again, with parenting, you set boundaries and where you have loose boundaries, and but everyone needs some structure to feel safe so that they can go and perform. And that's basically what it was about. It's putting some really strong structures that encourage strong performance and strong effort, strong culture, strong behaviour, strong attitudes and things like that. And I just think because of that, they enjoyed themselves, enjoyed their footy and really felt it safe to be vulnerable out there and play that we wanted them to play.
So if you were giving advice to another coach on culture and they needed to improve the culture within their team, what would you tell them to do first? What would be the first things they should try to fix or improve?
Well, look at what's good to start with. I think when you're changing culture in an organisation, if you go in there saying this needs to be done, this needs to be done, it can be quite. I think first of all, you've got to find what's good and use that as your base and keep working with that, and then add the things that whatever it is that's not working, you know, it's going to be different in different organisations that's required. But to get people on board, you need them to feel good. So you need them to be feeling good that they're doing some things right, and you're just going to simply, I guess, find the holes and improve those.
And as you're going through that process of, you know, looking for what's good but also looking for the holes and the stuff you want to improve, how do you go about managing, you know, disruptive peer pressure within the team?
My experience is most people want to do the right thing. Most people want to belong to a place or a team or that is viewed upon positively. So you get the majority on board and you're disruptive and you set really strong parameters. I think the disruptive ones almost self-select out, and that's the value of having good leaders or getting a group of people on board, making sure that they're empowered by this and that they're helping driving it. And yeah, the disruptive people become less disruptive, and as I said, often they self-select.
You've described yourself as an emotional coach, but I'm sure there's times you need to manage your emotions. Are there any like tools or routines you use to sort of calm yourself down when the excitement's really building?
Not really. Probably something I could get better at. Yeah, look, I don't think my emotions drive, or I don't think my emotions are out of control. I just think that you should be able to show your emotions. And I think that that's okay. To think that you need to be cool, calm and collective all the time, that's just not human. And the best way to relate to people is to be human, and humans are emotional. So that's all I say when I say I'm an emotional coach. I'm not like a train wreck or anything like that, but I get really excited when they do really well. I feel the pain when they lose, but I probably don't demonstrate that. I'll hold that into perspective and drive the group and put them in a space where they need to be to go forward. But there's no doubt that you go home and you don't sleep because you feel it. It's like, you know, you want them to do well, and when they're doing well, you're happy for them. And when they're not doing well, it's extremely sad and painful. As again, it looks like, again, it's like parenting. Your kid comes home and says someone's picked on them, and it's like you feel like your heart goes out, or you feel angry, or you feel sad. I just don't think, yeah, but you don't show your children that, but you're allowed to have feelings is all I'm saying.
It's interesting you talk about coaching being similar to parenting, but sometimes in coaching you've got to step back. You've got to find that line and move away from the players and give yourself some distance from them. How do you cope with finding that line?
I think it's just finding the balance between guiding, educating, growing and self-discovery. And stepping back is about self-discovery. As a coach, the more that the players can do that themselves, the better it is for you and the better it is for the group. So it's actually a really, I think, positive tool to be able to step away. But again, it's about knowing individuals, knowing your groups, knowing your coaching staff. There's a model that I talk about called the will skill model, which basically is a four quadrant thing which demonstrates someone's at high level skill or high level motivation. How much input do you give versus somebody who's low skill but highly motivated? Like it's just this little will skill quadrant model that helps you know, oh, okay, with that person I perhaps need to step in a bit more, but with this person I don't need to step in quite as much. But I think there's good coaches do have a balance too between empowering the team and having the team drive themselves but not drive the bus, so to speak. They can't control all the parameters. And I think good coaches have that balance between, at the end of the day, decisions have to be made, we're the bosses, but there's a lot of stuff that can happen within the meanwhile that empowers players and so forth.
When you're driving that bus, are there any values or behaviours that are really non-negotiable for you from the people that are sitting in the back?
Yes, there is some non-negotiables. Probably one of the biggest things that I always go on about is continual improvement. I'm not highly ambitious in terms of having big goals, but I do believe you need to do what you do really well, but always look to get better. And that's something that I really strongly put onto my players and my staff, is really take care of what we've got to take care of, but you've got to always look to grow. I always talk about a program will give you something. For example, St Kilda Footy Club will have a program. The Richmond Footy Club will have a program. We've all got programs and they're all designed around parameters that the AFL give out. So, and we think we do a good job and they think they do a good job, and they're all probably similar, to be honest, with only a few little differences in between. So if you want to be better than everyone else, what else are you doing to be better? You can't just do what you're given. You've got to be doing more than what you're given. So what that looks like for each individual, I always talk about that, like you've got to do more than what's required. For me, it's massively very strong on work ethic. I don't get anywhere without working hard, is my belief. So some of those things are non-negotiables. And it's also about the bigger picture, which is what we're trying to achieve as a group. So as athletes, I think sports people are inherently selfish. There's no doubt my whole family life structures around what I do, and that's selfish. But I think that's what drives us a little bit. But it's about being selfless within a team. And so what is that? It's not negotiable how to be selfless but still bring your best self.
I want to talk about selfless, if I can, a little bit, because you've coached teams that have won multiple titles in a row, so five in a row with Darabin. How do you get people to reset after success and move forward without a sense of entitlement or expectation?
Yeah, well, that's probably another thing, is I'm very big on being humble, that there is no entitlement, but there is expectation to perform. And there should be expectation to perform. So, I mean, even for example, as our first year in the AFL, St Kilda, our expectation was we weren't an expansion club going into a competition. Our expectation was we're here to win games of footy. We're going to be measured by games of footy. We're in the business of winning. We're not going to judge ourselves on our win-loss ratio because we are starting out. But by God, we're expected to win. So there is expectation around performance. There is expectation around training and what does that look like for performance. But I guess it goes back to when you win five in a row, and I think there was a time when we never lost a game for 3 years. Mm. It goes back to there's always something to work on. So there's always something to get better at, or there's also always something, a new trend that you could potentially look to do, or there's bad habits that you tend to fall into because, you know, let's just say you might be winning a bit, so you might get too forward of the ball and that becomes a bad habit. So there's always something to work on, and I think if you just look at whatever it is you're working on that week, that's all you do. You work on what you need to work on, and that just drives your performance.
You've said, I have a high level of self-belief, but you've also said the biggest critic is myself. I need to do this job properly for all women in general, which is a tremendous amount of expectation and pressure to put on yourself. But what are your top tips in dealing with self-doubt?
I think actually shouldn't be called self-doubt, I guess. You should have self-belief, but you've also got to always be open to learning, so that your self-belief doesn't become a blocker. Oh, I know that. That's not the way it works. Like there are some things that you do know, but there's a lot of things you don't know. And that's with anything. And I think you've got to have self-belief to be strong in your convictions, but you've also got to be open-minded with a growth and have a growth mindset to what's going to make you better. Because no matter what level you're at, you're always going to be better, whether you've been coaching for 10 years or 20 years, or whether you're a first-year player or a 10-year player, there's always something that you can be better at doing. And it's just a matter of doing that, being better at it.
Are there any places where any times you've come in as a coach, either in a support role or in the head coach role, and you've seen this lack of a growth mindset in the playing group and that you've done something to try and open that up?
Yeah, a lot of it goes back to confidence, goes back to finding the strengths in people, and people got to feel good about themselves. And if they don't feel good about themselves, it's really hard for them to, I guess, play not out of their skin or beyond themselves, but even play to their potential or grow to their potential. So it's just the classic example of it's okay to make mistakes type thing. Like, everyone's going to make mistakes. It's okay to feel vulnerable every time you go out on a footy field. It's okay to have, a lot of things are okay. And I think if you can put some things into perspective and own them, well, then those things will be less inhibiting for them. So I think if you can really just hone in onto their strengths, build their self-belief through not minimizing, but through owning and acknowledging that mistakes will happen, that being nervous will happen, that being vulnerable will happen, that all these things can happen, I think you go a long way to growing self-belief into a person in a positive way.
Peter, you come across, and a lot of your players talk about you as being a very human coach, a person that's very connected to them as individuals. And you have talked about, in this discussion, how you tailor your message to the individual. But I'm interested, in a game like Australian rules football, where you've got multiple coaches, how do you keep that message consistent across all of the staff?
Yeah, actually just really simplify it. I mean, I could say the same thing every quarter time speech. It's going to be okay. Like, you don't deter too much from your messaging. You just keep repeating. You'll have your key points and you keep repeating it. And I've been probably mistaken for it in the past too, but overcomplicate things or over-verbalise things. So I've really learned that the less you say, the better it is. And it's just about being direct. And when you've got a lot more staff involved, you actually need to make it even more simple. And if you want to have the elaborate discussions, you do it on an individual level with some players that can handle it. Some players can't, some can. Some players need the stimulation. So it's also getting that balance. There's times when coaches go out and really simplify things, but then you're highly intelligent person is completely bored, so you need to find a way to stimulate that person. So you might do that one on a one-on-one.
Peter, and just lastly, if I can ask you one final question, and it's, what legacy do you believe you're leaving as a coach?
Never really thought about that myself. Maybe that's one to ask people I've coached, I guess. Well, I guess my legacy is probably goes back to the comment that you said at the start around persistence. Just look to grow, continually improve, all those things. I think if you put that into perspective, not just as a player, but as a person, I think I would have gone a long way to influencing quite a few people in a positive way.
Peter Searle, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. I appreciate it, given you've got all those kids at home. So thank you very much for your time.
No worries. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hi, everyone. It's Paul here, and you have been listening to our discussion with Peter Searle. The key highlights for me were Peter's view that when you want to try and improve a culture, you should look at what is good to start with and then use that as the base to build energy and belief. How, as a coach, it's important to empower your team to self-discover. This will eventually benefit the individual and the group, and her use of a skill and will matrix to help achieve this, and how being selfless within the team is one of her core non-negotiable requirements from athletes. I hope you enjoyed it as much as Jim and I did. And just before we go, coaches are not usually the type of people who seek the spotlight, and so if you can put us in contact with a great coach that you know has some timeless lessons on life and leadership to share, then we would love to hear from you. You can contact us using the details in the show notes.